This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of distal clavicle fractures from the trauma section on orthobullets.com. Starting with a brief summary, distal clavicle fractures are traumatic injuries usually caused by a direct trauma to the shoulder from a fall in adults. Diagnosis is confirmed with standard radiographs and a 15-degree cephalic tilt view, otherwise known as a Zanka view. And treatment is with immobilization or surgery depending on the displacement and stability of the distal clavicle, as determined by whether the coracoclavicular ligaments, otherwise known as the CC ligaments, which include the trapezoid and conoid, are intact. In this episode, we will review the epidemiology, etiology, relevant anatomy, classification systems, clinical presentation, imaging findings, differential diagnosis, treatment options, treatment techniques, and complications from distal clavicle fractures. Beginning with the epidemiology, distal clavicle fractures have an incidence that is relatively common, accounting for 2.6 to 4% of all adult fractures. Regarding the demographics of distal clavicle fractures, they are more common in older osteoporotic patients and are less common in pediatric patients. With respect to anatomic location of clavicle fractures as a whole, 10 to 25% of all clavicle fractures occur in the distal third segment. Moving on to discuss the etiology of distal clavicle fractures, the mechanism of injury and pathophysiology is similar to the mechanism for midshaft clavicle fractures, which usually occurs after direct compressive force is applied to the shoulder, such as after a fall or a trauma. With regards to the important pathoanatomy to keep in mind, fracture displacement corresponds to a number of factors, including the fracture location, such as whether it is extra-articular or intra-articular, the fracture pattern, such as whether it is simple or comminuted, the integrity of the coracoclavicular ligaments, i.e. the conoid or the medial and the trapezoid or the lateral ligaments, which provide primary resistance to superior displacement of the lateral clavicle, and fracture displacement also depends on age, with pediatric patients usually having an intact periosteal sleeve. Some of the important conditions associated with distal clavicles are rare, but may include floating shoulder, scapulothoracic dissociation, which should be considered with significantly distracted or widened fractures, rib fractures, pneumothorax, and neurovascular injuries. With respect to the most important clinical anatomy to keep in mind related to distal clavicle fractures, one must consider the acromioclavicular joint. Further details on the acromioclavicular joint are provided in the acromioclavicular joint anatomy episode from the shoulder and elbow section on orthobullets.com. With regards to AC joint stability, the static stabilizers include the acromioclavicular ligaments or the AC ligaments, as well as the coracoclavicular ligaments or CC ligaments. Beginning with the acromioclavicular or AC ligaments, these provide anterior to posterior stability and insert 6 mm from the distal end of the clavicle. The components of the AC ligaments include the superior, inferior, anterior, and posterior ligaments. The superior ligament is the strongest, followed by the posterior. With regards to the coracoclavicular or CC ligaments, these include the trapezoid and conoid ligaments, which provide superior to inferior stability. The CC ligament is composed of the trapezoid ligament, which is located laterally and inserts 2 centimeters from the distal end of the clavicle, and the conoid ligament, which is more medial and inserts 4 centimeters from the distal end of the clavicle on the posterior border. The conoid ligament is noted to be the strongest. AC joint stability is also dependent on the joint capsule. The dynamic stabilizers of the AC joint include the deltoid as well as the trapezius. Moving on to discuss classification systems for distal clavicle fractures, these include the NEAR classification as well as the AO classification. The NEAR classification divides clavicle fractures into type 1, type 2, type 3, type 4, and type 5. These fracture types are determined by their location and overall stability and indicate whether or not a fracture is operative. In the NEAR classification, Type 1 fractures are extra-articular fractures occurring lateral to the coracoclavicular ligaments, with the conoid and or the trapezoid remaining intact, with minimal displacement, and should be considered stable. These are non-operative injuries. Type 2 injuries in the NEAR classification may be further subdivided into Type 2A or Type 2B injuries. Type 2A injuries are fractures occurring medial to the CC ligaments, with the conoid and trapezoid ligaments remaining intact. There may be significant medial clavicle displacement, and these fractures should be considered unstable with a non-union rate of up to 56% with non-operative management. Therefore, type 2A injuries are considered operative. Type 2B injuries may further include two fracture patterns. The first fracture pattern would be a fracture occurring between the CC ligaments, with the conoid ligament being torn and the trapezoid ligament remaining intact, or a fracture occurring lateral to the CC ligaments, with the conoid and trapezoid ligaments being torn. Significant medial clavicle displacement will occur, and these fractures should also be considered unstable with a non-union rate of 30 to 45% with non-operative management. Therefore, type 2B injuries should also be considered operative. With respect to type 3 injuries in the near classification, these are intra-articular fractures occurring lateral to the CC ligaments and extending into the AC joint. The conoid and trapezoid ligaments remain intact, and there is minimal displacement. These injuries are considered stable, though patients may develop post-traumatic AC joint arthritis. Type 3 injuries should be considered non-operative. Type 4 injuries are physeal fractures that occur in skeletally immature individuals, with the conoid and trapezoid ligaments remaining intact. There may be displacement of the lateral clavicle that occurs superiorly through a tear in the thick periosteum, where the clavicle pulls out of the periosteal sleeve. Type 4 injuries should also be considered stable and may be treated non-operatively. And lastly, type 5 injuries are comminuted fracture patterns with the conoid and trapezoid ligaments remaining intact, though there is significant medial clavicle displacement, and these fractures are usually unstable. And type 5 injuries are usually operative. The AO classification of distal clavicle fractures simplifies things and divides fractures into type A, B, or C, based on fracture displacement and whether or not the coracoclavicular ligaments remain intact. Type A fractures are non-displaced injuries with intact coracoclavicular ligaments. Type A1 injuries are extra-articular, while type A2 injuries are intra-articular injuries. Type A fractures are non-operatively treated. Type B fractures are displaced with intact coracoclavicular ligaments. Type B1 are extra-articular injuries, and type B2 are comminuted injuries. Type B injuries may be treated either non-operatively or operatively. And type C injuries are displaced injuries with torn CC ligaments. Type C1 injuries are extra-articular injuries, while type C2 injuries are intra-articular. Type C injuries should be treated operatively. On clinical presentation, patients present with symptoms of anterior shoulder pain, and on physical examination, one may note swelling, ecchymosis, and tenderness to palpation, as well as AC joint deformity, potentially skin tenting, which may predict an impending open fracture, as well as a careful performance of a neurovascular exam, noting that the suprascapular nerve is at risk of injury, which can manifest as weakness with external rotation with the arm in adduction. With regards to imaging findings, radiographs are recommended with upright AP of the bilateral shoulders, axillary lateral, and a 15-degree cephalic tilt view, otherwise known as a Zenka view. This helps to determine superior-inferior displacement of the clavicle, and one may consider having the patient hold 5 to 10 pounds of weight in the affected hand to exaggerate the deformity. A CT scan with views including the coronal, sagittal, and axial views, as well as a 3D reconstruction view, may help to evaluate displacement, shortening, comminution, articular extension, as well as non-union. The differential diagnosis for distal clavicle fractures should include clavicle shaft fractures, pediatric medial clavicle physeal injuries, pediatric distal clavicle physeal injuries, and acromioclavicular separation. With respect to treatment options, treatment may be either non-operative or operative. Non-operative treatment with sling immobilization with gentle range of motion beginning at 2 to 4 weeks and strengthening beginning at 6 to 10 weeks is indicated for stable fractures of near type 1, 3, or 4. Non-operative treatment is also indicated for pediatric distal clavicle fractures in skeletally immature individuals. Operative treatment with open reduction internal fixation has absolute and relative indications. The absolute indications include open or impending open fractures, subclavian artery or vein injuries, floating shoulders, or symptomatic nonunions. Floating shoulders are distal clavicle fractures in combination with scapular neck fractures with greater than 10 millimeters of displacement. Note that floating shoulder is defined as a distal clavicle and scapular neck fracture with greater than 10 millimeters of displacement. The relative indications for open reduction internal fixation include unstable fracture patterns such as near type 2A, type 2B, and type 5 fractures, as well as patients with brachial plexus injuries, which is questionable because 66% of patients with brachial plexus injuries have spontaneous return of function, and other relative indications include closed head injuries, seizure disorders, and polytrauma patients. Regarding techniques for these treatment modalities, the technique for sling immobilization should include immobilization using a sling or figure of eight brace, though prospective studies have not shown a difference in functional or cosmetic outcomes between the use of a sling or figure of eight brace. Notably, no attempt at reduction should be made, and gentle range of motion exercises should begin after 2 to 4 weeks, with strengthening beginning at 6 to 10 weeks. Outcomes of non-operative treatment with sling immobilization show a non-union rate of about 15%. Patients who undergo sling immobilization and non-operative treatment often have poorer cosmesis as well. The risk factors for non-union include near group 2 fractures, which make up to 56% of non-unions due to the disrupted CC ligaments, as well as advanced age and female gender. With regards to the treatment techniques for open reduction internal fixation, typically this is performed with limited contact dynamic compression plating or hook plating, though there are other options. Limited contact dynamic compression plating may be approached from the beach chair or supine positions. The surgical approach will be a superior approach to the acromioclavicular joint, and temporary fixation with K-wires may be obtained. The instrumentation may include locking plates or pre-contoured anatomic plates for multiple locking screws, and greater than 3 or 4 bicortical screws should be placed into the medial fragment to reduce the risk of screw pullout. With regards to hook plating, this may also be positioned in the beach chair or supine position, with a superior approach to the AC joint and temporary fixation with K-wires as necessary. The instrumentation for hook plates will vary in hook depth as well as the number of holes. Proper hook depth ensures the AC joint is not over or under reduced. The technique of hook plating is generally used when there is insufficient bone in the distal fragment for conventional clavicle plate fixation. The hook should be placed posterior to the AC joint and positioned as far lateral as possible to avoid hook escape. Greater than 3 to 4 bicortical screws should be placed in the proximal or medial fragment to reduce the risk of screw pullout, and notably a second procedure is required for hook plate removal. Other options for open reduction internal fixation include AC joint spanning fixation, which can be used as an alternative to hook plates, transacromial fixation, tension band wiring, intramedullary screw fixation, coracoclavicular ligament repair and reconstruction, or the modified Weaver-Dunn procedure, which is primarily used for AC joint dislocations, but can also be used for distal clavicle fractures with easily excisable fragments and a transferable coracoacromial ligament. The advantages of ORIF include a higher union rate, faster time to union, improved functional outcome and less pain with overhead activity, decreased symptomatic malunion rate, and improved cosmetic satisfaction. Disadvantages of ORIF include an increased risk of future procedures, such as procedures for removal of a hook plate, symptomatic hardware, and infection. Regarding the postoperative rehabilitation following ORIF, in the early phase, sling immobilization is maintained for 7 to 10 days, followed by active motion. In the late phase, strengthening is commenced at 6 weeks when pain-free motion and radiographic evidence of union have been obtained. Full activity, including sports, is resumed at 3 months, and hardware removal may be considered usually after 3 months. Lastly, we will discuss the complications from treatment of distal clavicle fractures, and we will discuss them with regards to the non-operative complications versus the operative complications. With regards to non-operative treatment, the major risk factors are non-union, and AC joint arthritis. There is a 15% rate of non-union, with the risk factors including comminution, displacement, Z deformity, female gender, older patients, smoking, and distal third clavicle fractures, which more commonly go on to non-union compared to middle third clavicle fractures. The treatment of a non-union, if asymptomatic, is no treatment, but if symptomatic, may be treated with ORIF with plating and bone grafting, particularly for an atrophic non-union. With regard to AC joint arthritis, the risk factors for AC joint arthritis in non-operative treatment are near type 1 and 3 injuries and may be treated with distal clavicle resection. The complications of operative treatment include hardware prominence, hardware removal, neurovascular injury, non-union, infection, mechanical failure, pneumothorax, and adhesive capsulitis. With regards to the risk of hardware prominence, about 30% of patients request plate removal, and superior plates are associated with increased irritation rates. With regards to hardware removal, this is most common with hook plates. Regarding neurovascular injury, there is about 3% risk of neurovascular injury with hardware treatment, and superior plates are associated with increased risk of subclavian artery or vein penetration, as well as subclavian thrombosis. There is a between 1 to 5% rate of non-union with operative treatment, an approximately 4.8% infection rate, and a 1.4% rate of mechanical failure. And lastly, the risk of adhesive capsulitis requiring surgical intervention is approximately 4% in the surgical group. That is all for this review about distal clavicle fractures. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or the mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you are not already, please be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow, right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.